Major funding for On Point is provided by Liberty Mutual for all your auto, home, life, and business insurance needs. Liberty Mutual. Responsibility. What's your policy?
From WBUR Boston, I'm Tom Ashbrook, and this is On Point. We tell our kids never to cheat. It's wrong. But what happens when it's teachers and principals doing the cheating, whipping out erasers and number two pencils to change their school's standardized test scores? Last week, Atlanta boiled over in controversy over a new investigation that found systematic cheating in 44 schools in the Atlantic Public School System. 178 teachers and principals all in on it. And there is evidence that the problem goes well beyond Atlanta. Why? This hour, On Point testing, American education, and the message in the cheating. You can join the conversation. What's going on here? Why? How do we fix it? Have you seen it in your schools? You can comment at our website, onpointradio.org, or on Twitter and Facebook at On Point Radio. At the end of a tumultuous week, Atlanta Public Schools appointed Errol Davis as a one-year interim superintendent facing all this trouble. Here he is on Friday.
I am angered, and I'm sure you are too, that our students and parents were misled by the inaccurate test scores that misrepresented students' real proficiency, thus potentially depriving them of the support they need and they deserve.
There is fury in Atlanta. Joining me first today is Alan Judd, reporter at the Atlantic Journal-Constitution. He's one of the lead reporters for their long-running investigation into the Atlanta public schools cheating scandal. You can get links to that terrific coverage of that saga at our website, onpointradio.org. Alan Judd, thank you very much for being with us.
Sure. Hi, Tom.
First, compliments to you at the Atlanta Journal-Constitution. You were on this early and aggressively, but now we have the results of a state-level investigation into this. And just lay out, Alan, for us, if you would, just the scale of what has now been alleged in the state report.
They interviewed about 2,100 people, and I think they examined 800,000 or so documents and a lot of data analysis. And they found very systematic cheating throughout the school system in the elementary and middle school level. Those students have to take an annual standardized test that helps determine whether their schools make adequate yearly progress under No Child Left Behind. They found at least 178 people, including 38 principals, who were identified as having been involved in the cheating. They said there probably are others that they haven't been able to name. More than 80 of those actually confessed that they had taken part in this. So it seems to be a pretty widespread problem across about two-thirds of the city's elementary and middle schools.
44 out of 56 schools, they found this. Your colleague there at the newspaper, Jim Wooten, writes that this is the most heartbreaking collapse of public sector integrity in Georgia in my adult life. What's the reaction been, Alan? I know this is not the first news of this problem. You all have been bringing it out for years now, but this was a very big public report on it. What's the response in Atlanta been?
There's a lot of anger, I think, a lot of shock, a lot of surprise that it could be that big. There were people who, over the past couple of years, as we've written about it extensively, have wanted to believe that it just couldn't be that bad. And they have now, many of them have come to grips with this, the fact that this is pretty much top to bottom, across the board cheating. In ways that most people would never have even imagined. You know, some of the of the duplicity almost of the people involved was kind of stunning. People, teachers who came up with ingenious ways to do the cheating.
How did they do it? I mean, a lot of it doesn't seem to have been that ingenious or that subtle. Just take the eraser, and correct the exams before you turn them in.
Well, that's true. Some of them also did a lot of voice inflections and a lot of signals to students during the testing, but the most of it appears to have been done after the testing was over. They had what many of them called cheat parties. They would either gather in an office in the school or in some cases actually would take the test papers away to someone's house and have a party. and sit there and erase the answers and correct them. But there were other situations that to get around people who might object to it, that one teacher was sort of taking digital photos of this person's desk and office so that they could make sure they put everything back in order before, so he wouldn't detect that they were cheating. You know, they were slicing into the shrink wrapping on the test booklets beforehand so they could copy the test and make up cheat sheets, basically.
Why? Maybe it's obvious, but how do you explain why so many educators cheated so egregiously here? Why?
There was a huge push from the top of the school district. Dr. Beverly Hall was the principal. I'm sorry, was the superintendent in Atlanta from 1999 up until June 30th of this year. She was formerly a deputy chancellor of the New York City school system. After that, was the state-appointed superintendent in Newark, New Jersey, after the state took over the schools there, and then came here in 99. She pushed very, very hard for data-driven results, wanted scores hitting certain levels. They had lots of numeric targets to meet. And while there is no evidence that she actually ordered cheating, it was clear that she was creating an environment that people could not meet their targets that she was setting. And she told principals, you have 3 years to do this, and if you don't do it, I will find someone who will.
I mean, what an irony. In 2009, she was named National Superintendent of the Year out of the entire country, Beverly
right.
Hall. But, you know, the kind of improvements that this cheating seemed to indicate were going on in schools, you all recognized early on, were statistically highly improbable. I mean, at the very least, it has the appearance that a blind eye was turned here.
That's true. The reporting that we did early on in 2008 and 2009 showed that in some schools, the increases in scores had a probability of something like one in a quadrillion, numbers that most of us don't even have the capacity of understanding. Then we learned from the state investigation that there actually were reports earlier than that. In 2006, the superintendent was briefed on an investigation that showed pretty extensive cheating at one of the middle schools. There were a lot of other reports over the years, including some in the newspaper going back as far as 2001, looking at these just phenomenal score increases. And what was happening in the schools, apparently, was, according to the investigation, as they would cheat and show progress, they would have to cheat more the next year and the year after that to keep up and keep it going.
What was the pattern of the cheating in Atlanta? Atlanta has a highly racially segregated school system. So what's the map of cheating look like? And give us some analysis, Alan.
Primarily, it's in a swath of Atlanta across the south side of the city that is mostly poor neighborhoods, mostly African American neighborhoods. Most of the schools that we've looked at, that are in this and that we've looked at have 95% to 100% kids who are African American. Close to that many, if not more. Are eligible for a free or reduced price lunch, which is obviously an indicator of poverty. So it's really, in many ways, it's the least advantaged and the most needy of the kids in the system who seem to have been at the brunt of this.
And there were reports of significant kind of intimidation. People felt afraid to speak up about what they saw going on.
Right. They frequently punished the people who were blowing the whistle on the wrongdoing. We have written a good bit about that over the past year or so. Teachers who would question what was happening in the school, either from direct knowledge of seeing someone else cheat or just simply raising the question, would find themselves being punished, being suspended in some cases. I mean, some people have actually lost their jobs over this. You know, sort of trumped up charges against them to keep them quiet, which obviously had the effect of keeping others quiet.
What happens now? The superintendent there, Beverly Hall, got big bonuses year after year for this, you know, apparent progress, a lot of which appears now as fictional. Is there room here at her level or below for legal charges? What happens?
The district attorneys in three counties in Atlanta and two surrounding counties are looking into the idea of filing charges. There were a lot of criminal acts that were described in the investigation that came out last week. Hall would be possibly liable for something along the lines of filing false documents with the government or illegally swearing to certain things by certifying the test results. Some of her top aides, apparently, according to the investigators, lied during the investigation or did other things to obstruct justice. Some of them destroyed government documents to avoid implication in this. So there is a chance of a fairly large number of charges being filed.
And Alan, we just have a few seconds now, but what's the baseline for Atlanta now? Because so much rides with No Child Left Behind on progress on scores, but if the scores were so systematically bogus, what's Atlanta do?
Well, that's the big question. And the city has brought in the recently retired chancellor of the state university system, hoping he can straighten this out in over a course of a year as the interim superintendent. It's a huge issue. There are, I think, 28 days before school starts for this term, and they have 38 principals who are under a cloud. They have well over 125 or 30 teachers who are under a cloud.
Alan Jett, I know I've got to let you go right there with the Atlanta Journal-Constitution. Thanks for your great work on this. Thank you for joining us. When we return, a mother with four kids in that school system. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We'll be right back. We're talking this hour about the huge standardized test cheating scandal in Atlanta. And beyond, teachers cheating to bump up student scores. We're looking at why and what it says about the state of American education. We're joined right now from Atlanta, Georgia, by Shauna Hayes Tavares. She's a mother of four, ranging in age from 9 to 18, all of whom have been in the Atlantic public school system. She went through that system herself. She's a very involved parent, school activist. She's been the president of the Southwest and Northwest Atlanta Parents and Partners for Schools. Shauna Hayes Tavares, thank you very much for being with us today.
Hi, Tom.
I know this
Thank
has been.
Thank you for having me.
It's great to have you. I'm sorry to have you in these circumstances. This has been coming out for a long time, but that was quite the lightning bolt last week. How are you and other parents in this school system taking this on board, that the cheating could have been so widespread?
Well, I think that it certainly has been overwhelming and devastating. But to some of us who've been following this for quite some time, and me included, we were not totally surprised. But certainly to see it in a comprehensive report was a little overwhelming, and to see how deep the cheating or the lying or the misrepresentation went. You know, when we think about cultures, you know, cultures live by their models and they die by them as well. APS lived by data, and now we're dying by the data. And it makes a difference in how children and parents perceive, because the question, not only is the question about teachers and administrators cheating on tests, but the real question becomes, why did they feel the need to do that?
Well, I mean, live by data, die by data, but what about morals? What about ethics? I mean, don't they have a place in here?
You know, I agree with that. And I think that when it comes to education, our models are not people, but rather ideals. Our seeming schizophrenia about education can be understood through the struggle of two different types of models. And one is certainly by creating a manufacturer of education, especially in the urban society. So, of course, we know that morals and ethics should be a part of that. And a lot of people talk about a culture climate of cheating and what Dr. Hall was able to create. I think that the culture that Dr. Hall created, along with the No Child Left Behind, has been a lethal combination in urban school districts, where we're not measuring children by what their abilities are and their individual talents and growth, but we're yet measuring them by one standardized test and determining whether they're successful or whether the teacher was successful based on that one standardized test.
Well,
when I say
You have or have had four children in that system. What's their reaction to this been?
You know, I have to continue, and this is the sad part for us as parents and people who are invested in the school system with our best treasures, who are our children.
Yeah.
And I have a daughter who just graduated, and we were just talking in general over this last week, and she mentioned some things that happened in third grade at one of the schools that was listed about how a teacher just kind of would give answers. And, of course, as a third grader, she thought nothing of it except the fact that the teacher is there to support and help students learn. And so she didn't think anything of it until, you know, in 17 months ago when they started really talking about the cheating. And it has been hard to talk to my children, especially my children in those schools while it was going on, to try to reassure them that they are not cheaters, that all of their teachers are not cheaters, and that, you know, it's hard because we look at the teachers as models of behavior.
You want to anyway.
Yeah, you do. Because, I mean, they are the nurturers in the school system, you know. And so we as parents, we entrust our children to them. And to have to convince my child now that your teacher is not a cheater, or possibly if your teacher is a cheater, that somehow it does not affect you. That is an arduous task, I tell you, Tom, to able to tell young people.
No kidding. Are those teachers going to be back in classrooms this fall, and those principals? Do you know?
Well, you know, Chancellor Davis reassured us. But, you know, for me, it seems difficult because there's a due process and we have about 25 days left before we'll be in the classroom.
Yeah.
And so a due process with 180 folks is a little difficult to, you know, to really pinpoint and get them out of the classroom. Contracts were signed on May 15th for teachers. And so there's a money issue here. There's contractual issues here. There are legal issues here. There's circumstantial evidence that it's some things that are listed in that report.
Mm-hmm.
But we have been assured through the interim superintendent, through the Board of Education, that those educators will not be in front of our children come the fall. It remains to be seen, because I don't see personally how they can get all that done, deal with the SACS accreditation and all the other things that we have, and be ready for the open the first day of school, and have all of those teachers, and then hire teachers and have them prepared, you know, to go into a classroom without a lot of chaotic confusion.
What a giant challenge. Shauna Hayes-Tavares, please stand by right there in Atlanta, right in the thick of this. I want to welcome into our conversation Greg Toppo from Washington, D.C. He's national K-12 education reporter for USA Today. He's been listening and doing a lot of reporting with other USA Today reporters himself. Greg, thank you very much for being with us.
Thank you, Tom.
So Atlanta is really in the spotlight here, and it's not pretty. But you've done a statistical analysis of results from across the country, and I'm reading here. I mean, you found Washington, D.C. with apparent problems and maybe half a dozen other states where you haven't done the kind of thousands of people on the ground investigation they did in Atlanta, but what looks to be evidence of manipulation of scores. Am I right, Greg?
Yeah, we actually looked at six states and D.C. Earlier this year. We wanted to take a look at sort of nationally what was going on with testing, but we decided that would be probably billions and billions of test scores. So we thought, let's take a sample. And so we analyzed test scores very similar to what they did in Atlanta, math and reading for millions of kids. And in the end, we came up with about 1,600 examples of cases where classes in a public school, for instance, the entire fifth grade in a school, had statistically improbable gains on the state tests.
And you looked at Arizona, California, Colorado, Florida, Michigan, Ohio, and Washington, D.C. And in all these, you found these examples?
That's right. And I imagine wherever you looked, you'd find them. Simply because of the way the tests are scored, the distribution curve.
Is it possible those were just heroic efforts by those students and teachers and not cheating?
Well, it was, you know, I like what Alan said a few minutes ago. I mean, it's possible, but statistically sort of astronomical. It really wasn't, and we really were very careful trying to, qualify what was and wasn't possible.
Now, in Atlanta, you've got 80 of these people who have outright confessed to this cheating, and 178 after real tight investigation allegedly have done it. Does Atlanta look like an outlier to you, or could we have similar problems sort of unexposed in other major American cities and towns, Greg?
That's a good question. I mean, the one thing, when I read what happened in Atlanta, I mean, it really is breathtaking. And by the way, just an aside, I think what the folks did at the Journal-Constitution really deserve some serious kudos.
Good old-fashioned shoe-leather newspaper reporting, and God bless them for it.
Yeah, really. And shows that newspapers are not dead and that we need them more than ever in a case like this. I don't know if you can call Atlanta an outlier or not. I mean, they certainly had what is starting to look like a culture that just broke down in the face of the Child Left Behind. I think you could probably make the case that there are a lot of other cities where similar things are going on, where the marching orders are very similar. So I don't know if I'd call Atlanta an outlier.
Greg Tuppel, please stand by in Washington, D.C. And Shauna Hayes-Tavares, mother of four, with deep knowledge of the Atlanta school system there in Georgia. With me in the studio right now is Daniel Koretz. He's professor of education at the Harvard Graduate School of Education, author of Measuring Up, What Educational Testing Really Tells Us. Daniel Koretz, thank you very much for being with us.
Delighted to be with you, Tom.
So what do you think of what we're all gazing on in some horror here in Atlanta? What thoughts does it bring to mind?
Well, it is horrifying, but to paraphrase Rahm Emanuel, it'd be a shame to waste a good scandal. I would hate to have people walk away from this thinking that if we root out outright cheating, we've solved the problem. The problem is much bigger. And in my view, cheating is the canary in the coal mine. The problem is what both Alan and Shauna put their fingers on. Mm-hmm. We have a system in which there is unrelenting pressure to reach targets that are often unrealistic, and where increases in test scores are the end-all and be-all. That's what determines everyone's well-being.
But this was rolled out to help communities exactly like the ones that where this cheating has unfolded in Atlanta. This was supposed to create leverage so that people could not blow off low-income neighborhoods and say, whatever, and instead, we've got this. But this isn't what the goal was.
No, it isn't. And it is ironic because equity was one of the major reasons why this started. And we clearly do need both better accountability and testing in schools. We just aren't doing it well. And the evidence has been accumulating now for a good 20 years that we're not doing it well. What I think we should focus on is not just the fraudulent gains in scores that we've seen in places like Atlanta, but the bigger problem of bogus gains in scores that have been produced by widespread inappropriate test prep, bad test prep, that is not cheating.
But just what, telling kids exactly what the questions are going to be?
Well, there are many, many forms. One, and by the way, much of this is supported by school districts and states. One is to clue teachers in to tell them what aspects of the state standards are likely to be emphasized on tests so that they can skip the rest. Another is to focus on how material is presented on the particular test that a state buys so you can learn mechanical ways of teaching kids or ways just to game the system.
Why isn't this energy going into real teaching instead of gaming the system? I mean, that was the idea here. It's not easy to cheat either. I mean, you got to organize all this. You got to hide. There's a lot of effort that goes into that. Why not do it by actually raising the kids' level of education up to where they truly perform?
Well, as somebody who's taught everything from fourth grade on up, I'd say it's because good teaching is a whole lot harder. That's number one. Mm. And number two is that the performance targets that are set in many cases are so unrealistic that people simply don't know how to reach them by legitimate means. So they turn to illegitimate means.
I want to bring listeners in here. We've got a lot from around the country. Annette in Nashville, Tennessee. Annette, thanks for calling. You're on the air with Shauna Hayes-Tavares and Daniel Koretz, Greg Tuppel. Thanks for calling, Annette.
Hi, Tom, Greg. This is Annette calling from Nashville, Tennessee.
Yes.
I am so happy to know that reporting is still alive and that newspaper and communication is going to be able to tell the real story. I just wanted to let you know that the problem is systemic. It's not just in Atlanta. It's probably across the nation. And, you know, unless I am the same as the others who are doing wrong, I really won't point fingers. But we know that it is a problem, not in and of itself, of cheating. It's a problem that the people, the architects of No Child Left Behind, are also systemically to be blamed and at fault. And the reason for that is, as educators, we know, and I'm talking about I have gone from kindergarten to higher education, we know that the standards were unrealistic to begin with. And to rob the children, the very children who need the help, in and of itself is a national crisis.
Annette, are you a teacher? How long have you taught? Are you a teacher? How long have you taught, Annette?
I've taught 33 years in K-12, and now I am at higher education right now.
And have you seen cheating since the era of No Child Left Behind? Have you seen this going on?
I haven't seen it going on, but you know what? Because I'm the kind of educator that works very closely with children. And I'm proud to say that I've always worked in the high needs areas in urban school districts. I have always been an advocate for saying, let us show you the growth measures of these children. Many of them, they come in kindergarten without knowing their names, their colors, but let us show you, and I'm proud of Tennessee that we have a value-added system so that we can show a growth measure. You know, it's almost like saying that you're 5 feet and by the next year, and that we hope you're going to be at least 6'5".
Right.
I'm without nutrition. I don't have nutrition in my home. I don't have foods. My lights have been cut off.
Yeah.
Now, we hope you make that measure, and if so, you're going to get a big gold medal.
Mm-hmm.
We've rewarded a system without looking at the true needs.
Annette, I appreciate your call from Nashville. If I may, let me turn it back to Shauna Hayes-Tavares in Atlanta.
Yes.
I mean, there's the call for a broader sense of growth measures, but you've had four children and still have children in this school system, and presumably...
Yes.
I mean, we can hear, you know, you're the kind of parent who wants the best for their kids. I mean, these goals are called unrealistic. And yet, mm-hmm. if they were hit, it would just mean a well-educated child. Should that be unrealistic?
I don't think so. I think that the standardized testing is not the issue. The weight of the standardized testing becomes the issue. When we think about the reform models, and the reform models came up to make schools more efficient, so-called, almost always come from the business interest. They have not had a long experience with the factory model, but abiding to need to impact and have effective inputs as well. They also see education as a business opportunity and a chance to chime in on the $500 billion spent on public education a year. And what Annette is talking about is growth. What we are asking for and have been asking for mm-hmm. for years, if I'm a fifth grade teacher, let's just say, and I get a fifth grade student who's reading on first grade level, and this is what Annette is saying, mm-hmm. and by the end of that fifth grade year, that child is now reading on third grade level, they still probably will not be
Sounds like we lost Shauna there for a minute. Daniel Koritz, let me come to you. I get what she's saying. If there's substantial improvement, even if it's not ideal, that's to be applauded. On the other hand, why should Shauna and other parents in Atlanta not be able to go in there with the expectation that their children will be educated to a scale where they'll be effective in their own careers and effective citizens?
Well, they should be able to expect that. The problem is that kids do differ, first of all. So kids will, even in an ideal system, differ in how well they perform on tests. But I think the real problem is what Shauna was saying before we lost her, which is that the problem is the weight that's being assigned to tests. The scores have just become just the almost the sole measure of performance, and the targets are in many cases simply made up. They're arbitrary. There's no evidence that people can reach them by legitimate means. So when you're faced with these targets, it's logical to expect that you'll find the worst problems in the lowest achieving schools because those teachers face the biggest burden in trying to meet these targets.
Let me get a call from Laura in Stanton, Virginia. Laura, you're on the air.
Hi, Tom.
Hi, what's your experience?
I have been teaching in the public school system here in Augusta County for 9 years.
Mm-hmm.
And we have had standards of learning tests as long as I've been teaching and even before. I will say that there does need to be a benchmark of sorts of things that every student should be able to understand and have knowledge of by the time they finish my eighth grade class.
Yep.
I do disagree with the fact that we expect every child to pass a multiple-choice test, and that's what we have for our standardized testing in Virginia. It's unacceptable, and I do agree that AYP and the standards that they have set for AYP with No Child Left Behind are unattainable.
Could you cheat, or have you seen teachers cheat on the results of their students' work on these tests, Laura?
Absolutely not. And we here in Augusta County have online testing. So there is no way for us to take an eraser to anything in order to change a result.
Laura, we got to take a break right here. I'm sorry for that. But maybe that's one answer. But it sounds like the questions are much bigger than erasers and answers here. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We'll be right back. We're talking this hour about the huge standardized test cheating scandal in Atlanta. and beyond, teachers cheating to bump up student scores, looking at why and what it says about the state of American education. We're joined this hour by Greg Toppo. He's national K-12 education reporter for USA Today. They've looked at this dynamic right across the country. Daniel Koretz is with us, professor of education at the Harvard Graduate School of Education, author of Measuring Up, What Educational Testing Really Tells Us. You can read an article based on his book at our website, onpointradio.org. And joining us from Atlanta, which has been at the epicenter of this, certainly in the last week, Atlanta, mother of four who are in or have been in that school system, ages 9 to 18, Shauna Hayes-Tavares joins us. Ian in Indianapolis, Indiana. Ian, thanks for calling. You're on the air.
Hi, Tom.
Hi.
I think the whole system was kind of flawed to begin with because it put more pressure from the teacher in the classroom to the superintendent when the White House put this No Child Left Behind. They didn't get the parent participation because, yes, my kids did go to the inner city school,
mm-hmm.
and there are a lot of other problems going on with kids having medication, kids having discipline problems, and then just kids in general, not, like you said, the earlier caller said, they don't even know their name or how to spell it or ABCs when coming to school. And so there should be a various tier groups along with parental involvement, because my daughter, mm-hmm. she had problems.
Yep.
But when I got her test scores back and I saw where she needed help, then that just kind of forced me as a parent to sit down with her, do her homework, go to school, be a more participating parent. And I saw my daughter's grades come up to the point that she made honor roll, and she stayed there as long as I was participating with her and engaged with the school and the classroom. But on the other hand, there were parents that, you know, don't even go to school. They just get the kids ready, and they send them out. They'll get breakfast at school,
yep.
and the kids are just falling behind. But then the teacher, her tenure, their pay, and everything is based on how that one child performs.
So are you sympathetic to a teacher? Are you sympathetic to a teacher who sits in, with an eraser and cheats and changes the scores, or not, Ian?
I'm not sympathetic to it, but I can see where the tremendous amount of pressure put on those teachers.
Yeah.
But there's no pressure put on the parent to come in and see about their child, you know?
Yeah, this clearly just sprawls right out beyond the classroom. I mean, Daniel Koretz, we've been in No Child Left Behind land for years now, and surely there's been a learning curve for us as a country. I mean, where does this Atlanta news fall into the national conversation about what's going on in K-12 education here? Are we responding to this or just plodding ahead?
Well, we'll see whether we respond to the cheating scandals, but up till now, the learning curve has been pretty slow. We were doing this in most states before No Child Left Behind. We've been doing it for decades.
Standardized testing.
Well, high-stakes standardized testing. Mm-hmm. We've just been ratcheting up the pressure notch by notch as with each wave of reform. And so far, the policy community has been pretty resistant to paying attention to the evidence that we've had really since the early 1990s that simply holding people accountable for test scores doesn't work very well.
But what's the answer in policy, Greg Toppo? I mean, in No Child Left Behind, the stakes just get higher in the next couple of years here if we don't have even trustworthy statistics on this data-driven system, as Shauna says. Is there any response in the government, in the federal government or state governments?
I think the one thing to be a little optimistic about is that nobody from the Secretary of Education on down really likes the system. I think it would be one thing if the folks at the top, the state superintendents and governors thought it was just dandy and everybody else hated it. But I think it's not the case, and Dan may disagree, but my sense is that it's pretty roundly disliked.
But it's the law of the land.
System. Yeah, but I think what we're going to see in the next couple of years is a real change in how we test kids. I mean, we've already got most of the states signed on to a pair of, I guess you could call them experiments in how to do testing differently. And I think that's a good sign. I think that's a good way to react to what we're seeing in places like Atlanta.
Daniel, do you see that sun coming up?
I wish I could, but I don't. It's true that most states have signed on to one of two consortia that are trying to improve tests in various ways, but they're largely not discussing the kind of problem we're dealing with here. What we're dealing with is that tests are just a very small sample of student performance, and that because of the pressure to raise scores, people are focusing on the measure rather than than teaching. It's analogous to saying, well, my kid has a fever today. Rather than find out why she's sick, I'm just going to cool the thermometer down. And so if people
with some ice water.
With ice water. And the ice water doesn't have to be cheating. It can be something like going through the test carefully year after year to see which parts of the curriculum are de-emphasized and saying, well, we won't teach them, which, by the way, is done nationwide. To put this in context, we have seen since the early 1990s that even in the absence of cheating, or at least in the absence of known cheating, large increases on the test used for accountability cannot be trusted. They simply cannot be trusted. They are often but not always severely inflated. Sometimes they are larger than real gains in student performance and student learning.
Even real progress takes more time and effort. It's gradual. It doesn't just shoot up.
Well, that's true too. But what I mean is that the measure itself can't be trusted. It's been corrupted. Right. And we often see gains in test scores that are 3 to 6 times as large as they ought to be because people are cutting corners. Now, a lot of the ways they cut corners are not cheating. I'm looking at a commercial product sent to New York State teachers that shows 8th grade math teachers that two of the standards in the state standards have been tested 12 times in 10 years, and one other, evaluate expressions with integer exponents, has been tested once. Well, what would you do? You'd focus on...
Forget about integer exponents.
You bet.
Out the window.
And teachers, for 20 years, teachers have been telling us in surveys that they do exactly that.
Shauna, I want to bring that to you. Let me get one quick call from Dayton, Ohio first, if I may. Robert, okay. In Dayton. You're on the air, Robert.
Okay. I wanted to emphasize that this testing thing is a double-edged sword. On one hand, I've been teaching 24 years, and... when I first started teaching in this district, what I noticed was that teachers were, many of the teachers were just giving kids grades, and the kids were learning nothing. Mm-hmm. When the standardized test came in, they continued to just give kids grades and teach them very little or nothing. But they get good grades on their report cards. When the standardized test grades came out, they were failing.
But the standardized test was supposed to be the answer to that, Robert, so that people couldn't get away with hiding behind inflated grades. They'd have to perform in a way that you could judge, you know, by an objective standard.
It was supposed to be. Mm-hmm. And so that required more teaching. But now the cheating has come in. This year, when we were doing the standardized test, I walked in on teachers who were cheating. Openly.
How were they doing it? Were they telling the kids the answers or erasing the wrong answers, putting in right ones? What?
No, they weren't. They weren't telling the kids the right answers. The kids were reading the questions and asking, "Is this right?" And the teacher would say, "No. Go back and
work
read
some
it
more.
Again,
yeah.
And choose something else."
Wow.
Okay. In my mind, that's cheating.
Well, yeah, but so what should we do, Robert? If it's a double-edged sword, how do we keep from...
What we should do is focus on educating children and making these tests more applicable to education and not just making money. Because in my mind, most of the reason for... The way the tests are currently constructed is to make money because consultants come in when the test scores are not reached and offer these opinions, which never work, and then they get their money and they're gone. And a few years later, after more failures and more failures, they come in with a different strategy, get more money, and then they're gone.
Robert, in Dayton, I appreciate your call very much. Shauna Hayes-Tavares, you're listening there in Atlanta. What do you hope to see? What do you want to see? And don't you want your children to be able to pass a standardized test that's, you know, not for Albert Einstein, it's just for a good K-12 education? Don't you want your kids to be able to pass
Most definitely. Like, I spoke a little bit earlier about the weight, and I wanted to chime in on something Ian mentioned about parental involvement, because I am a very, very involved parent with 4 children in Atlanta Public Schools, and for the most part have been in 4 different schools in Atlanta Public Schools and very involved in all those aspects. But I want to talk about that. Now, parent involvement, you know, you can look at it that way, but most parents expect that if they drop their child off at K and pick them up at 12, then they should have a basic adequate education. Mm. And that parents normally, who are working parents, single parents, non-single parents, mm-hmm. two-parent households, whomever, do not always, cannot always recognize good teaching. They do not always, can they, can't go into the classroom all the time and say, oh, I understand the pedagogy of best practices
I can
in
attest
teaching.
To that. You walk in, you're bewildered. Good, bad, who knows what's going on, unless
exactly.
it's just egregious. Yeah.
Exactly. And so with that, we have to depend on our educational system. In 1965, when the Civil Rights Movement was over, and that was the start of the Elementary and Secondary Education Act, because what they said was that states in the South were not able or would not be willing to adequately teach children of color unless there was some dollar figure attached to it, and that there was some sort of criteria based on the federal government.
Yep.
And so these type of things have all become a little milky and muddled within this process of trying to attain. And when the No Child Left Behind came in, and I didn't think anything was wrong with that, because for me, and I'm going to talk a little bit about my special needs son mm-hmm. and how okay. I believe that this cheating situation dealt with him.
Mm-hmm.
For me, that said that even the subgroups, even the hardest to educate children, you will now be accountable for.
Right.
I thought that was awesome.
Yeah.
Okay. So as a parent, I'm saying, yay. Mm-hmm. Now I have a son who is a rising fourth grader now.
Okay.
He is deaf, hard of hearing. He contracted bacterial meningitis at 3.5 and became deaf, hard of hearing.
Mm-hmm.
So with that, I had to educate myself in that arena.
Mm-hmm.
We went into the Atlanta public school system at 3.5, going on 4 years old. He spent from that time until the end of his second grade year at the same particular school. The testing really starts first grade as far as the CRCT is concerned. My son, who is deaf, hard of hearing, with involved parents, and we know that he can and has the ability and aptitude to be a high achiever. He exceeded on all of his tests. Now, of course, for a parent like me, that was very exciting, because even though for most of my children, I want them above grade level, but for him as a deaf, hard of hearing child, I was satisfied with him being on grade level.
But how do you get this for the great mass of kids in these schools, 44 out of 56, mm-hmm. This cheating has been found. I mean, that mm-hmm. doesn't cut it. So how do we get out of this? And you hear Ian and others saying these problems are bigger by far than what's mm-hmm. in the classroom.
Right.
I mean, how do you do it?
Tom, to me, it's a culture of low expectations as well. You know, and that is
that's
where
what George
talk
Bush
about.
Said, and No Child Left Behind was his answer to that.
It was, but what he didn't do is that he did not have, it was sort of like a non-funded mandate, the way that it has trickled down. It's a great idea, but we're never void of great ideas. What we're void of is implementation and the trickle-down effect of these great ideas and these visionaries. And my son, for instance, you know, first grade, second grade, exceeded in everything. I took him out to the Atlanta Area School for the Deaf for this year.
Mm-hmm.
He went backwards, which is an anomaly in itself. 50, 60 points, didn't meet on anything. And my question to Atlanta Public Schools was just clearly that I'm an involved parent, is that I believe that you all have given me some false sense of security as to where he is. So things that I could have been doing in the last 2 years, I didn't probably do, because I was very comfortable with thinking that he was at least on grade level.
So, but you say he went backwards, but maybe the scores he was getting weren't even for real. I mean,
exactly. That's my point. And that is where the anomaly comes from. And that's what I tell them. And I'm appealing to them to say, now I received a false sense of security. My son has a false sense of security. And now he's going to fourth grade, where the work is even more difficult. And now we have to play catch up, possibly from years before. And again, those of us who are not in the highest level of social economic mm-hmm. status
yep.
means cannot hire personal one-on-one tutors
sure.
to sit 8 hours a day to make up for years of incompetence and years of ineffective teaching. And so it's 6,000 children that were affected that we know of right now from the 2009
yep.
to the 2010 scores in the drop.
That is,
and they took a 12-week strategic. It's awful.
It's brutal.
it is.
Daniel Koretz, what do we do about this right now? In the here and now, No Child Left Behind has got the screws on schools by design, and they're tightening. They're going to tighten further. But if we can't trust results that are coming out, I mean, if a parent can't know what their child really did the previous year, and then neither does the government then know if they really improved the next year or not, how do we get a handle on this?
Well, we have to, essentially, the medicine's not working, so we have to change the medicine. The first thing we have to do is we have to make monitoring of the score gains we're getting routine. It shouldn't just be a matter of an occasional, a very industrious journalist.
If they're statistically out of line, look at
that. More than that. More than cheating.
Okay.
We need to know, parents need to be able to trust the scores that they're getting, which means that we have to evaluate routinely whether those scores are inflated. We have to go into schools and see how people are producing higher test scores. And we have to do that frequently. not on rare occasions.
Mm-hmm.
We have to make accountability broader. Several of the people who spoke today said that part of the problem is that nothing counts very much except for test scores. Mm-hmm. That's a mistake. We need to think about what really matters when we go into schools, and the things that matter have to count. We have to make tests harder to game, which virtually no one is trying to do. We have to set realistic targets, which is going to be politically and socially a very difficult thing to do.
Because it means downscaling?
In some cases, yes, it will. Accepting a slower rate of growth.
Mm-hmm.
And I also think we need to rethink what constitutes good instruction. What I've seen that's truly appalling in the last 5 or 6 years is that both reformers and in some cases the educators of educators are telling young people going into teaching that test prep is good instruction. It is not good instruction.
Mm-hmm. If that's all you've got. Greg Tappo, do you see signs of reaction in Washington? Are we going to see a change in this law? Are we going to see reaction to realities like Atlanta has experienced?
You know, I think it's a little early to tell whether there's going to be a reaction to the cheating scandals, but I do, like I said earlier, I do think there's pretty broad dissatisfaction with the system we have. I mean, kind of along the lines of what Dan was just saying, you know, we need to broaden it in some fundamental ways.
Which may or may not happen in any kind of calendar that will work for a national system or work for the kids in that system. Shauna, you've got, what, 3 who will still be in the Atlanta schools this fall. Do you know
Yes.
who their teachers are yet?
I do not know who their teachers are. Let me just say what this has done for, I hope, parents and community people across
20 seconds,
the
Shauna.
Country is that we now will be more involved and ensure that our children are receiving the education and that we are supplementing in any way that we can related to our resources and related to our own intelligence. So I just hope that this is an eye-opener for those communities.
Well, we salute that spirit and that determination and very much hope it works. At the same time, I think we've seen a systemic issue opened up here in Atlanta and beyond that clearly needs some addressing. Shauna Hayes-Tavares, mother of 4 there in Atlanta, thank you so much for being with us today.
Thank you for having me so much.
Alan Judd with USA Today, or with the Atlanta Journal-Constitution, joined us earlier. Greg Tappo with USA Today and Daniel Kuritz at the Harvard School of Education. Thanks for joining us. This is On Point.